in this episode of She's Off Script.
You know what? I'm going to apply to the number one journalism school in the country, because if I get in, then that's a sign from God and I should go. So I got in and I didn't go.
Corey Hale is now the CEO and co-founder of Culture Banks, a news platform redefining business and tech news for Black professionals. She later became the first Black woman to anchor a daily news show from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
I was a 27-year-old intern at Bloomberg TV when I graduated. I was interning with kids literally that were 10 years younger than me.
Of course, getting to this point was not without its challenges.
As we like to say in TV, everybody pays their dues. So I was working overnight producing for Europe. And during the day, I was actually a correspondent for thestreet.com. So I literally slept 4 hours a day for almost an entire year, working these two jobs, trying to figure out how the heck to get out of these two jobs because I'm dying. Literally suffocating.
Join me as we go off script with media mogul in the making, Corey Hale. Corey Hale, welcome to She's Off Script. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. It has been a while since I've actually seen you. I was telling you earlier, the last time I physically saw you was in the cafeteria at Goldman Sachs, and you were heading off to grad school. How have you been since then?
Well, since the day I left the halls of Goldman Sachs, a lot has changed. I did go to grad school. I did go to journalism school at Syracuse's prestige Newhouse School of Communication to transition into media. And now I run my own media company that creates business news content specifically for Black professionals. So really the perfect amalgamation between Bloomberg and Black enterprise.
What path did you take to get here? Tell us a bit about your background.
As you noted, we both used to work at Goldman Sachs.
Right.
So I definitely started out of undergrad in financial services. If you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be in media, I would have laughed at you. Like, no, I won't be. I have no aspirations to be in media. I don't know anyone that works in the industry. And I'm really good at math and finance. And this is what I want to do. I was very happy doing finance. And I just think a higher power really spoke to me and kind of said, you know, this is really what your path is. This is what you should be doing. So I just kind of went with that and decided to apply to only one grad school. I was like, you know what? I'm going to apply to the number one journalism school in the country, because if I get in, then that's a sign from God and I should go.
Wow.
So I got in and I didn't go. I got in and I actually deferred my acceptance and stayed at Goldman another year.
And interesting.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, like, because you kind of put things out in the universe. And I really am a firm believer, the stuff you put out there in the universe is conspiring to get you what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you might be throwing things out in the universe that even internally, you're not really ready to process or digest. And I think that was kind of what happened with the grad school. I wasn't ready to really take that leap of faith and go into journalism. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, I just thought they also gave me a chance to defer your acceptance for a year. So I quickly take that box and was like, yes, we'll defer for a year. Thank you very much for the offer. And then I went and it was a really good experience. I was a 27-year-old intern at Bloomberg TV when I graduated. I was interning with kids literally that were 10 years younger than me. But in a way, we were on the same level and it was necessary because I did need to start at the very, very bottom. So I went from a very good job and making very good money to literally being a 27-year-old intern. So there are a lot of things that I needed to process with that entire job. And from interning at Bloomberg, I ended up becoming a producer, working, as we like to say in TV, everybody pays their dues. So I was working overnight, producing for Europe. And during the day, I was actually a correspondent for thestreet.com. So I literally slept 4 hours a day for almost an entire year.
And that is paying some dues.
More dues than, first of all, I would wish on anyone. But in the meantime, too, working these two jobs, trying to figure out how the heck to get out of these two jobs because I'm dying, literally suffocating. So trying to find another job, and luckily a producer, an executive producer at CNBC, saw a video that I did for thestreet.com, sent me a generic LinkedIn. Oh, you know, I'd like to add you to my LinkedIn network. And instead of just accepting, I wrote back three sentences like, "Hi, I'm Corey Hale. This is what I do. Used to be an investment banker. Want to know more about, you know, working at CNBC." And he and I started talking via LinkedIn. That turned into emails, which eventually led to interviews and getting the job at CNBC. So nice. I was a TV producer there for a couple years. So now I'm very happy because I have one job.
Right.
It's during regular daylight hours. You would have thought I won the lottery. That's how happy I was. Like, oh my God, I'm going to be up like and not just dead tired. And then I'm going to, because I was also working 6 days a week because I was working European hours as well. So never ending.
At this point, are you regretting the move to leave Goldman?
Oh, yes.
100%. Oh, wow.
But not because I miss doing what I was doing. I miss the security that I feel comes with, even though it's a false sense of security, because that's absolutely what it is when you work for these bigger organizations. But you feel like, okay, well, I'm at least able to pay my bills and do that. And like I was a contract worker at both of these organizations, at Bloomberg and thestreet.com. Like, there was no I was killing myself. I was making good money between the two jobs, but at any moment, which is what happened, like, one of the jobs could go away.
Right.
And so I wasn't sure if maybe this was really the purpose that God had for my life. Maybe I just made this whole thing up. And I will say, they were moving the operation that I was doing at Bloomberg, the overnight production, back to London.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a true story. Literally 2 weeks before the operation in New York was going to end, I finally got the job offer from CNBC.
Wow. Amazing timing.
Yes. And I've been talking to them for at least 2 or 3 months at this point. It just was taking forever, as big organizations do. They tend to take a very long time. While I'm suffocating between all this work, waiting on them to like make a decision, and then I'm about to be out of jobs altogether, like have no idea like how I'm gonna make it. Right. And the job comes through with CNBC, which is great in terms of, yes, now I'm gonna have a full-time job and blah blah blah, but more so it was affirmation that I was on the right path and that I needed to keep going and I needed to keep learning. And so from CNBC, I used to book this guy, very quirky individual by the name of John Steinberg, who was the president of BuzzFeed at the time. And then he went on to become the CEO of the Daily Mail. And he was just one of hundreds of guests that we would book to come on the live shows at CNBC. He decides to launch his own media startup called Cheddar and was like, hey, you should come over because I understand you want to get back on camera full time. And like, we don't have anyone that really has live TV experience and has a actual credentialed banking background like you do. So I was like, yeah, I'm out of here. Like, I want to own my own company anyway. Like, this isn't, CNBC isn't going to get me that. And I want to speak to a very diverse audience, and CNBC doesn't care about that either. So I went over to Cheddar and it was great. Then I was down at the stock exchange. I actually ended up becoming the first African American woman to anchor a daily news show from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, and it's like 200 plus year history. And I thought, oh, this is great. Like, now I'm reaching the people I intended to reach all those years ago when I left Goldman, when I first started the process of even applying to graduate school, right? To say, this is the path I think I want to take. So that started back in 2010. So in my mind, I've been on this 8 year, almost 9 year journey to this point. Right. And then I was like, you know what? This is not actually reaching the demographic that I want to reach. So let me kind of figure out what I need to do next. At this point, I've been with the big Wall Street firms, and I kind of skipped over a whole other part of my life, which we'll just take it aside for a second. So I actually did not start at Goldman Sachs. I actually started at UBS in London.
Right, right.
As an investment banker right out of college. So I came out of the gate with this like wealth of international business experience, and then came to Goldman in the States. And then the rest of the story is kind of where we are at right now. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, if someone who can already speak this financial lingo and has worked for the best business news networks can't launch their own media company or figure out how to do so, mm-hmm. especially with other people that don't have nearly the amount of experience behind them and they're doing it, then there's something wrong. And if you, I know people say it all the time, if you don't focus on yourself, if you don't take a chance on yourself, no one else will.
Right.
That's exceptionally true. And also, like, you got to be able to really live in the tension of it all.
Mm-hmm. Because and there, I'm sure, is hard. A lot of that running a startup. But before we dive deeper into that, I want to take you further back to where you said out of college, you already went into investment banking.
Yes.
Why did you make the decision to go into investment banking?
This is actually a very easy answer. I went into investment banking. So I went to Hampton University for undergrad in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I went into it is because I got into finance because, like I said, I was good at math. It was just like naturally easy for me. And I actually got into finance as a major in college because I thought I was going to be a financial planner. Like that mm-hmm. was my goal. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to manage rich people's money and it's going
to
be all
good. Where did you get that from? Where did wanting to be a financial planner come from?
I just thought that, well, I knew I didn't want to be an accountant and I wasn't mm-hmm. going to major in accounting because I found it super boring. And I thought my family had a financial planner and I'd known him for years, a couple different mm-hmm. ones. And
that's
I was like,
what you had seen. That's what you right, knew
like,
about.
This mm-hmm. makes sense. Like I could do this, you know, manage people's money, tell them to kind of, you know, invest in like this product or this annuity or something. And like, mm-hmm. it would be great. And my last summer in undergrad, I interned at a financial planning company that was owned by a Black woman. And I was just like, there's no way. No one is going to entrust a 21-year-old out of college with their hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to properly invest with no background or experience. And I actually graduated from college a semester early, so I finished in the fall. So at this point, at the end of this final summer when I was still in school, I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't be a financial planner. Like, that's not going to work out for me. So I started researching like what other jobs people do that major in finance. And then I came across investment banking and I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to figure out how to become an investment banker because I can't go into financial planning. That seems like a dead end road where you're not going to make any money unless you happen to have a personal friend that has a lot of money that knows you. Mm-hmm. I would have needed to have been the Maverick Carter to like a LeBron James. Like mm-hmm. a personal friend that's going to just put me on and let me invest their money.
Right.
That wasn't going to happen for me. So that's when I just started being like, hey, I'm going to try and become a bank analyst somewhere. And I always wanted to do a study abroad when I was in the college, but none of the study abroad programs at my university had were in places I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. So I never did it. And so
hence the UBS assignment abroad then.
Right. So that was the real impetus. Like I still wanted to go abroad. And at the time my mom was like, you know what? Like you can do whatever you want. Like if you want to move to another country, she's like, that's fine, but you just need to get a job.
Mm.
And I'm like, all right, challenge accepted. Right. I'll figure it out. No, it's like looking back on it, I think I was just, I don't want to say overly confident, but I always had like this vision, like, oh, if people get jobs in investment, I don't think I understood that it would be hard to get a job in investment banking. Cause like I said, mm-hmm. I had like 4 months of a semester where I decided this is what I was going to do.
Right.
And then I got the job and I just kind of went out there to London, this super naive 21-year-old kid. I actually didn't know the country code to dial back to the U.S.
Oh, man.
This is a true story. I had no, that's how naive I was. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get over there. It's going to be great. And I was like,
but you know what? I think sometimes that naivete is what you need to take the risk that get you to where you need to be, right? Fast forward to today, you've built on that experience abroad at UBS to really build a phenomenal startup.
Right. I definitely needed that. I always say misplaced confidence in things is never really misplaced. It all depends on what you do with it. And it worked out for me because going out there to UBS and having that experience was really great. At the time, I was significantly younger than all of my expat friends that were in banking that worked in London. But it was through those relationships that I was able to get a job at GS back in the States. And I always say it's like the power of networking. You hear it all the time, but it's always about having conversations with people, going beyond the email. Like, you're never too busy to have a 15-minute coffee with someone. You're never too busy to send a response, even if the response is something that's going to lead someone to, you know, let them know that you're not interested in whatever else they may have going on. Right. Like, it's the fact that you took that extra 30 seconds to send a reply to their email or their text, or you went and had coffee with them for 20 minutes, like, it's not going to ruin your day. And sometimes, yeah, it is super annoying and I don't want to go to the other networking event. Like, I had coffee earlier today with someone that I met at a Facebook event. Turns out she's a social media genius. You just never know where that's going to lead. And I will say for me, which I'm sure is not the case for everyone, but besides that job at UBS, right out of undergrad, I've actually never just applied for a job and gotten it. Every job that I have had in my career thus far has literally been through a conversation I first had with someone.
Wow. So that's a testament then to the power of networking.
Yeah. Like, you have to keep talking to people. You don't know who someone knows. You hear it all the time. You don't know who they know, how they can introduce you, how they can help you. It's really true. And you don't know how long something's going to take or when it might become valuable. Like, what's valuable when I was in investment banking doesn't necessarily seem right off the bat valuable in terms of the people or the connections to the stuff I do today. But in some ways it is. The correspondent job that I had at thestreet.com, I got that through a guy that I met at a random Syracuse alumni networking event who didn't really work in that part of the industry. He actually did PR. So he wasn't a producer. He didn't work in TV, none of that. But he said, hey, you seem cool. I met him for I met him at the event. He agreed to meet me for coffee. We met for 15 minutes. He said, I know a producer at this place called thestreet.com. I had never heard of it. He was like, do you have a reel or something that I can send to this producer friend of mine that he knew? And so he sent that over. And that is literally how I got my first on-camera job. It's that same PR guy who knew I was ready to get out of CNBC. And we ended up doing a lot of business together because he's a PR person. So he represents a lot of clients. So then when I was able to like get on full time working as a producer overnight at Bloomberg, I was able to book a lot of his clients to come on the show. And same for CNBC. Well, fast forward to also Cheddar, I mentioned like how I knew John. So I already knew him, but it was my PR friend who said, hey, I know a guy who's a producer at Cheddar, and he put something on Twitter that said Cheddar is hiring. And that is actually how I started talking to John, was through that same PR friend who happened to see a tweet from a guy that he knows. And that's how John and I reconnected. He was like, yeah, we're looking to bring people on. So you truly don't know how people are going to impact your life like that.
Right.
One person is the reason that I had both of my on-camera jobs, and he didn't work at either one of the companies that I was working at.
And so you never know what impact just taking that extra 5 minutes to talk to someone is going to have on you. That is amazing. And so fast forward now.
Yes.
You've left your full-time job.
Yes.
What boxes did you have to check for yourself just to know you were ready to take that leap?
You never know. you never, ever know. I always say there's I've been naive going into each career at some point. And going into this phase of my career, there's definitely a lot of things that I wasn't prepared for, that I didn't plan for. They're just things you don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you keep waiting on a reason to do it, you'll always find 10 reasons not to. Like, so
that's true, talking yourself out of it.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm too busy, and maybe I have too many family responsibilities, I have too much of this. Like, you'll always find a reason to not do something.
Mm-hmm.
And even for me, if we could just get very candid, like, there's still things I struggle with. Like, I struggle with failing. And even with the business as a whole, there are daily fails every single day. I'm like, this didn't work out. This didn't go the way I wanted to. Like, I told you earlier before we started about someone I was talking to that I wanted to, you know, profile their company, and that person wasn't really interested. Well, that puts me behind because now I got to find other companies, you know? So like, there are always these little setbacks, and it literally is about failing fast is how I look at
it.
Like, so you failed at this. All right. How quickly are we going to recover?
The comeback.
There are some days though that are really hard where I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I literally don't know how to come back from this. I don't know how to pull it together. Personnel changes happen in the business. Then maybe a lot of it's on me to do. Well, how does that work out? And then you start thinking about all this stuff you have kind of lined up. Okay, well, I do have someone coming on board. Maybe I only have to do this particular part of the business by myself for the next month. Like, and sometimes literally writing down what it's going to take to get you started, because the list in your mind seems enormous. And when you write it down and look at it, it's probably not as big as you think it is. And you just start with one thing on the list and say, what is it going to take to get that one thing done?
Right.
If I can get this one thing accomplished, then I can get one more thing accomplished. And even if that list has 30 things on it, you just break it down and say, I'm going to figure out how to do these 5 things this week. And don't put so much pressure on yourself, which is something I struggle with daily, to execute everything perfect and at the highest level.
No, absolutely. That can be paralyzing when you feel like everything has to be perfect before the world sees it.
Right.
If you adopt the mentality you were talking about earlier, fail fast, get it out there, get some feedback on it. That way you can improve or pivot if you need to.
Right. People have to not be afraid to change. And I will say this, something when I was working at Goldman, I was on this special assignment for GS Bank down in Houston. And one of the managers that was also on the project at the time, she said to me, she said, Corey, you adapt to change really well. And I was like, okay. For whatever that's like worth. And she was like, you adapt to change really well. That's going to serve you very well in the long run, just in your life.
Absolutely.
And being like this young person, I didn't really know what she meant. But you know, she was an MD, and I'm like, okay, sure. I'm glad I adapted to change well. And now that I'm older and like clearly years and years removed from that, like now I understand more what she means by that. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, especially with what I do now, it is, yeah, you do just have to figure out how to pivot very quickly. I don't consider myself a go with the flow sort of person. Like, I am like super type A personality, but I am always like, all right, this isn't working. Let's move to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Like, how long are we going to sit here and wallow in why this isn't working?
As of today, how many visitors do you have to your site every month?
Right now, we do anywhere between 7,000 to 10,000 visitors to the site a month. We have a little more than 1,000 newsletter subscribers. But in terms of our content view, so that's everything across all the different social media platforms and some of our content partners like Forbes and soon to be Black Enterprise. But Forbes, ICO Alert, these sort of places, we actually do more than 1 million content views a month.
So that's amazing.
That's why I always say when it comes to metrics and analytics, it's such a shaky thing in terms of what people want to focus on. Mm-hmm. Like, does it matter to you whether or not those people are solely coming to like your company's website, if they're solely like looking at your newsletter, or does it matter that they're getting the content? Because getting the content doesn't necessarily need to be like on your platform. Like, people have to change the way they think about ownership and how you attract different people and get to your demographic or your audience. And if your audience is on social and they see something, we do a lot of short form animation across various social media platforms. So when they see that information, are they taking action? Is it something that could be followed up on? Like, mm-hmm. where are you actually able to monetize that in the bigger scheme of what it is your company does? And that doesn't necessarily need to be built into unique visits to your website or how many people are subscribed to your newsletter. While that, those are great because you can say this is solely ours, someone looking at your content on Instagram is also solely yours. And someone
right.
liking it or sharing different things is also mm-hmm. yours. But that doesn't necessarily right count in those metrics of unique visits.
Right. And I know some people who get all their news from Twitter. Right. A lot of the news outlets are on Twitter, and that's where they consume their information. They're taking the news to where millennials like to live these days in social right. media. So I follow your train of thought there. And so what does an average day look like for you? I can imagine your schedule is grueling just because you have to stay at the forefront of all the breaking news that's coming out.
Yes. An average day. Oh, my goodness. No one day is the same. I will say most days, though, I'm up. I shouldn't say most days. Every day, I'm definitely up by 6 a.m. And mm-hmm. I'm always taking the first 20 to 30 minutes of the day to like center myself and like pray and just like get my life together as much as it mm-hmm. can be gotten. That's 20 to 30 minutes, which is not enough time for me to get my entire life together. I need years. And then, I mean, meetings just will kick off most days around 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. The business is run primarily out of my residence, but we have people that work all across the country that contribute content. We had interns that worked remotely all across the country. And I spent mm-hmm. a lot of time running around Manhattan meeting with the people. And as I like to say, I really work out of my backpack from any coffee shop anywhere in the world.
Ah, the glamorous life of an entrepreneur, although yeah. working remotely is the norm these days. Corey, why is it important to you that Culture Banks delivers technology, business, and cultural news in a way that appeals to Black professionals?
So the intersection of business and culture, I just feel like it's something that's never been really covered. For me, it's about making high-level business, tech, innovation, financial content relatable to the mm-hmm. Black community in a way that hopefully 20, 30, 40 years down the road, you start to see a shift within these communities, right? Because you're seeing a shift in those mindsets. And you start to see perhaps cycles of poverty being broken because people are now engaging with high-level business news content in a way that they never have been before. I think Warren Buffett says it best, like if you can't explain a product to your grandmother, then it's too complicated.
Right.
And that's how I feel about business news. I actually had someone say to me, I don't think Black people read business news. And I was like, that's exactly my point. He was like, I think more white people read business news. I'm like, why do you? I was like, you're making my point and you don't even realize it. Why do you think that is?
Mm-hmm.
Because the outlets that are out there are run by a certain demographic. And they're making news then catered to that demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if the people running a business news site were from a different ethnic group and they made their business news tailored towards that ethnic group? Don't you think that you would have the same type of impact with people engaging with content?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that no one's doing it. So
right.
that's why. And he was like, oh, well, you know, business news is just business news. Like the stocks are what the stocks are. I'm like, well, the stocks are what they are because of people that buy stocks and invest in stocks. And what if people really understood what was going on
mm-hmm.
and how these companies that you could own stock in relate to your community and to your core values? What
right.
if someone made that relevant? He's a lost cause, but he's a lost cause, but that's
you
okay.
You can't win them all.
No,
you can't win them all.
You can't.
It sounds like you've been going full throttle with your business, but when you do that, I'm sure other facets of your life suffer a bit. So what have you had to sacrifice to get to this point?
I feel like you sacrifice everything and nothing. You sacrifice everything because you work nonstop. seven mm-hmm. days a week. You don't spend a lot of time hanging out with your friends, with your family. My business is based in New York. I'm originally from Houston, Texas. I have no plans to go back to Houston. Granted, yes, I can work from anywhere. It's very important that the business is here in New York because this is where the investor sits. This is a financial hub, that sort of stuff. So I don't know when the next time is that I'm even going to go back to Houston and see my family. As a woman, my dating life is not as spectacular as one would like it to be.
There's an app for that.
there are several apps, but you know, you're just always busy. The time constraint, mm-hmm. it's almost suffocating. The amount of work that you put into it, not knowing how it's going to turn out.
Right.
Like even in your wildest dreams, the best idea that you have for your company, for your business, it probably won't come to fruition, and getting to the point where you're okay with that. But knowing that the plans that God has for your life are always much better than your own. Mm-hmm. So even your best plans, God's plans are going to supersede those. And that's where you kind of have to live within that space of knowing that it's still going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're sacrificing, but it's going to be worth it in the end.
It is going to be worth it, but it might not pan out the way you envision it right now.
And so knowing that, what are some of the toughest lessons you've had to learn along the way, along this entrepreneurial journey you're in now?
I would say that I have a pretty tough skin. The being shot down, you get used to it, and then you get tired of it. All in the same. You get turned down. I mean, especially coming out of media and being on camera full time. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a hard job to get. Those are very few jobs in the industry. So being told no, it's like, I remember when I was maybe thinking I should go into local news right after grad school to try to work my way up to the network level. I remember market number like 150 news director like turning me down. And being like, I just don't think you're good enough to be a reporter in this small town no one's ever heard of in Alabama. And it's like, really? I couldn't even do that, like local news, and like be like, this house behind me is burning. Don't you see the burned down house? Like, wasn't good enough for that.
Right.
But then Bloomberg came calling after a couple months, like, hey, you know, we liked you when you were interning here. We had a job for you. It's not the best job, but it is a job to get you back in the business and in the door, mm-hmm. but you got to work overnight. And I was like, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it. I'd rather work overnight and suffer doing that in New York City at an actual business news company, which is what I wanted to be in specifically, mm-hmm. than in market number 150 standing in front of a burned down house telling you that the house burned down.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. You give up everything, but then you don't really give up anything. Because every step that you take is one step closer to where you're supposed to be. It's all about the universe conspiring to bring you what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of time, right? Everything that you want to accomplish, it's out there in the universe. It's just all about the timing on when you meet up with exactly what it is you want in the universe.
That's a really great way to think about it. And I think that is good motivation.
It is always. You always put it out there. This is what you want. And, you know, you're working to it. And it's hard. It's so hard. And I had one of my business coaches tell me, my former mother-in-law was like, you know, they call it hard work for a reason, sweetheart. And people say, oh, I don't mind working hard. But I think a lot of people don't really understand like hard work. Like even when you work at jobs where you might work 12, 13, 14 hours a day, you might not mm-hmm. necessarily be working hard, right? You're working a lot.
Right.
But you're not necessarily working hard because you're not sacrificing that much other than perhaps, you know, not being able to spend time with your family, go out with your friends. But your mental state might not be sacrificed that much. Like, it's really hard work being an entrepreneur, and it doesn't end. And as soon as you get a win on something, you're probably going to get three more losses.
That's it. Inevitably, it's a cycle. You're up one day, down another, and you even out over time, right?
Yeah, you even out over time. It's always the long game. And entrepreneurism. It's always the long game. It's never the get rich quick short scheme, because mm-hmm. if you're that short sighted in your mindset, then being an entrepreneur isn't for you.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, something that's important for people to understand when they think about going down this track. So at this point, I really want to understand the business side of Culture Banks and what you're doing there. Could you help me understand what your business model looks like today? How do you monetize in a way that's different from the traditional media industry, just given that that has gone the way of the past a bit?
Right. So there, part of the revenue strategy definitely revolves around traditional media revenue models, which would be advertising, branded content, native mm-hmm. content, sponsorships, and things like the newsletter that we have. So very traditional forms, but really where we're seeing the most growth comes into the small niche event space. So not like the big conferences, but putting on something very siloed, very focused on a specific topic. That's really where you see the growth, because it's in these smaller groups that people are the most engaged. When you think of like big conferences, I always hear people say, oh, I went to this women empowerment event. I'm like, well, did you feel empowered? They're like, oh, I felt like motivated. I really didn't make any connections. The topics that I really wanted to be able to dive into, I couldn't, because it's such a big group. Mm-hmm. And that's really our strategy is, and eventually we're going to open up an intelligent arm, which will sell high value corporate subscriptions to our research. So if you're looking to get in to invest perhaps or expand your investment in certain areas, say like, artificial intelligence and banking, like we do deep dive research into how AI impacts, specifically if you want to think about banking, how AI impacts lending practices, how mm-hmm. do companies stay within regulatory compliance around that? What happens when lending practices that have already been very disadvantageous to minority communities then goes into the dark web of artificial intelligence? What does mm-hmm. that look like for your business?
And so it sounds like you are at the core still following traditional media revenue cycles, but right. also trying to innovate and expand.
Yeah,
I can imagine that's going to be important for your growth down the road as well.
Yes, definitely. I mean, eventually the revenue model will rely much heavier on the event space mm-hmm. And the high value subscription space than the, hey, this newsletter is brought to you by XYZ company.
How are you financing Culture Banks? Could you tell us,
yes.
you know, how do you think about that financing process?
I always think we could use more money all the time, more resources. We are very bootstrapped for the majority of the business right now, but mm-hmm. we have been able to generate some revenue through some of our partnerships with major brands like Lenovo. We've also received some grants. That's been extremely helpful. And sometimes I even talk to other organizations and say, hey, maybe you want to think about transitioning the company into a 501c3, because there could be way more grant money out there. But I think that this is a model that will continue to make business and be able to scale its revenue process. But that mm-hmm. it's good that we're also able to bring in some foundation dollars as well.
I think I read that you're also looking to start your fundraising process. Could you walk us through what that looks like?
Oh, fundraising, that is a fun one. To get in on raising money and talking with investors, it is a long road. And I think mm-hmm. that's something a lot of entrepreneurs don't necessarily understand, like how long of a road it is from the time you finally get connected with an investor to them actually cutting you a check.
So how are you getting connected with these investors? Because I think I've seen a statistic about how small a percentage of people receiving investor dollars or venture capital dollars are Black women.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult. Literally, it's always through connection. I think I've always been strong at connecting with people and not turning down events. So I've been spending a lot of time most recently with a VC fund that specifically invests in media companies. And the way I got that connection is the most random of ways. It was a lady that I used to work with at a former company. She runs a side group for Harvard that mm-hmm. puts on events maybe once a month or once every other month. And I went to one of the events, and one of their sponsors who had kind of done the food sponsor was First Republic Bank. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I really like helping connect women. Like, should we meet? Can we meet for coffee? I want to hear more about your company and see if there's anybody I know. And mind you, now she works for First Republic Bank. It has nothing to do, like, they don't invest in companies, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Met with her. She said, I have a friend who works at a media fund. Maybe she could just talk to you and shed some light. Mm-hmm. And that was how I got connected. So, like, there are 3-4 other steps, but because I said, yes, let's meet for coffee, let's do this, that got me into that particular media fund. Other people, always leverage your network. A guy I went to undergrad with, he saw that I was doing this, said, hey, do you know this investor? He actually is a Hampton alum as well. Like, let me see if I can connect you guys via email. Mm-hmm. So always, like I said, always responding to people. No one's ever too high or too low on the list to hear back from you.
So I think you've already seen the fruit of giving people time, right? It's yeah. really, I think you've shared that it's just really impacted your career path. And so hopefully you're able to connect in a positive way with some of these leads, and we can hear about the rounds that you're raising in the yes. very near future.
I hope so as well. It is a long process though.
So at this point in your business, what are the biggest expenses that you've incurred? And just in retrospect, were all those expenses necessary for people who may want to go down this path?
No, all the expenses are not necessary.
So what were they to begin with?
So I built like a small video studio in an empty bedroom in my apartment. So I went out, got mm-hmm. all the equipment. It's been set up for months and months and months now, and I have not actually done one video in there that we've used, because currently the company doesn't do video content, but we are mm-hmm. going to be moving into that very soon. And I got all this equipment, but I got all the equipment without fully having a strategy on what the video content for the business was going to be. Like mm-hmm. I should have, instead of running to the store to get all this equipment and have all the stuff set up, I probably should have spent that time writing out clearly what our video strategy was going to be, how often we were going to be putting out videos, because I wasn't considering the time constraint on all the other things that the company has going on. Mm-hmm. And I think that while it won't always be, I mean, it's a depreciating asset for the business, but it's still something that can be used. Mm-hmm. I still think that I can be doing more in that space. And I think I will definitely work on doing more in that space. So we'll kind of see what happens with that.
Okay. So word to the wise, before making any large purchases, right. just make sure you have a good strategy behind those purchases. So speaking of which, who have been some key mentors on this journey, and how did you find them?
My mother is super well versed in finance and business in general, and she's run her own successful business. She's also an executive coach professionally. So she's been super instrumental. Everyone is not going to have that in their family. I understand. Right. But she's been very instrumental. And also, I have a couple different business coaches that have come in, executive business coaches that have come into my life that have been very helpful with not just helping me figure out strategy for the business, but also helping me figure out mentally how to handle being an entrepreneur, because that's something mm-hmm. that I feel I wasn't really prepared for. People think you have a good idea, you have a product, or you know what your company is going to be, mm-hmm. and you just go out and execute, but no one ever really talks about the mental toll that it takes on you being an entrepreneur. And I don't think that's something that I was prepared for either. So having executive coaches that talk me kind of through things or talk me off the ledge and say, mm-hmm. it's going to be okay. And I think one of the best pieces of advice one of my executive coaches gave me was like, you know, in the end, Corey, no one's going to question whether or not you had the skill set, whether or not you were intelligent enough, mm-hmm. whether or not you are capable of doing this business, like, because you've already proven all of that. What they will question in the end is, what was your mental capacity to keep the business going? Because mm-hmm. it's that mental strength that is going to be the transferable skill set that people will look at in terms of if they want to bring you on board to run a company for them or to consult on a project, right? Mm-hmm. Because you already have everything you need to be successful. It's all about the mentality behind you carrying it out and how right. strong are you there. And that's really what the business is testing.
What other coping mechanisms were your executive coaches able to give you?
Well, they are definitely the reason that I like wake up and start every day like centering my mind and my spirit, my body, being like, all right, you don't know what is going to happen during the day, how bad things are going to go, mm-hmm. how good they might go, but at least you started the day in the right frame of mind. So no matter what happens today, you had however much time at the very beginning of your day where you were at peace. And so you know tomorrow when you wake up and you start again, you can still start at a place of peace.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Don't let your determining too, like what your happiness is centered around.
Mm-hmm.
And the happiness, running a company is your baby. It's like a child that doesn't ever really grow up. It'll never be potty trained and be able to go off on its own. That will never be the case. But knowing that like your happiness isn't caught up in those things and figuring mm-hmm. out what makes you happy. And it can't be something that ebbs and flows, right? It has to be a constant. It can't be the business did excellent this month. We made X amount of money. Now I'm mm-hmm. happy. Now the business didn't make any money and we're in the red the next month. And now I'm miserable and the world's falling apart. But where does your happiness center? Because you always have to go back to that.
Right. That is great advice. And I'm glad that those people were able to come into your life and at least help you get centered, just because it's a long journey. It can be.
It's so long. I mean, granted, almost coming up on a year for Culture Banks, but mm-hmm. when you're running a startup every month for like a year, it's literally almost like dog years. Mm-hmm. You're always like,
much happens.
We made it through another month. Oh my God, it's amazing. Okay, we're still alive. Everyone's still breathing. All right, let's keep going.
So a year into this journey, is Culture Banks profitable?
It is not profitable in terms of being out on its own making. Well, it's profitable in the sense that, yeah, we're generating revenue, but mm-hmm. we're not generating enough revenue to cover all of our expenses.
Mm-hmm. So that's something that you're looking forward to. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So five years from now, where do you see Culture Banks being?
Oh, goodness, that is a tough one. I will say 5 years from now, the way Culture Banks distributes content hasn't been invented yet.
Mm.
And the way that people engage with content has not been invented yet. But whatever that is, that's how Culture Banks will be distributing the information. And we will be the first sort of content players in that space, because it's very important to always be at the forefront and doing things that people will say 5 years from now, oh, we should be doing that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to tell people what I'm doing right now in terms of a very niche focus on business news for Black professionals that will eventually fan out to represent other minority groups as well, that none of the major business news outlets are doing. They probably will be doing something similar to this in 5 years. You've seen it in various forms across different platforms, but it's never been sustained. But they will be doing it. But we will be on to the next evolution of it, mm-hmm. that it won't matter that all these other platforms are now putting out their version.
Sounds like you're going to be staying at the cutting edge of a lot of innovation then in the next 5 years.
Yes.
I really enjoyed our conversation today, Corey. Yay. Thank you for sharing all of your experience. Thank you for being so raw and honest with us. For people who want to keep up with Culture Banks and see where this journey takes you, where can they find you?
So they can definitely find us on Twitter and Instagram. Both of those are at Culture Banks. That's B-A-N-X. And of course, on our website, which is culturebanks.com. And please sign up for our newsletter so you can just get Culture Banks directly into your inbox.
Hi there, it's Soa. If you'd like to hear more from me, head over to She's Off Script and sign up to get our weekly Off Script updates. I'm also on Instagram at She's Off Script. Every week, we'll continue the conversation on the She's Off Script Facebook community. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. I would love to hear your thoughts on my show.